This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right, Project. If you're listening to this right now, you're probably thinking, wasn't this supposed to be out like 12 hours ago?
Yeah.
But if you're listening to it in the future, in the far future, then yeah, we're a little bit late. We've got some technical difficulties on our end, which doesn't usually happen. Hasn't happened for a while. But upgraded the hardware. So I wouldn't say much needed, but I think just for the new studio and some of the stuff we're building, it's just going to be nice to have like all the gear that we need. And so it's just one of the things that's just been on the back burner for a while.
I think also if you're listening to this, you're still alive. You have not died from coronavirus. You should be grateful.
Well, okay, so it's actually getting crazy now. Obviously it's a pretty common point of, it's almost like in the same way those people you would start talking to with about like the weather. It's like the same people we start talking about coronavirus with.
Mm.
And what's interesting is everyone has like all these different facts about coronavirus that you didn't know.
That whole section of people that you got nothing to talk about with.
Yeah. And all of a sudden they're like, everyone has like one or two things that stood out for them about the coronavirus. And so a couple of things I learned. I think it's pretty tragic. The death toll in Italy now has reached over 500. So Italy is in full lockdown. I actually think police are patrolling the street. I don't think you're actually allowed to. I don't think you're allowed to leave your home, which...
Yeah, they've actually now, I think, because we're recording this into the future, they have, the whole country is in quarantine.
Yeah.
So I think it's like only, like, extremely important travel.
Right.
Other than that, you're meant to stay inside your home.
What I don't get is, how are they then feeding their populations? How are they wiping their ass? They've got that one figured out.
I do find the whole, like, toilet paper weird, because to me... Like, toilet paper is great, but huge portions of the world don't use toilet paper.
Right? Yeah,
like,
yeah.
All of India.
Yeah.
Massive parts of Asia. To me, it seems like that's a luxury.
Yeah. Lots of the Middle East.
Yeah. If I was like, dude, we're locked in, like, no supplies, I'd be like, okay, food, water, like the important stuff. Toilet paper, I'm like, that's on the back burner.
We used the... Did you use the it's a bidet. I think the Japanese word for it is bidet, but it's the water jet that goes into your ass.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So you've used that for,
fun. Yeah.
Use that to brush your teeth. No. When we were in Dubai for the
to fill up my water bottle. No, I didn't. Yeah, I used it.
Imagine filling up your water bottle and giving it to someone. Hey, dude, I filled up your water bottle. Oh, it's clean, right?
I'm sure it's clean. Which Japan. I'm sure it's super clean. We used it in Dubai when we went for the CrossFit Championship.
Yeah. I definitely used it. I remember using it.
Yeah. It was fantastic. But I just think, I don't know. I just find the whole, like, stocking up only on toilet paper to be like, that's one of the last things I'd be so worried about.
I also think wiping, how I had it explained to me by someone that was a member of ours, Egyptian guy, he got one installed in his apartment.
Oh, wow.
Because he's like, it's actually less hygienic wiping your ass.
Yeah, it's much better.
Because it smears everywhere,
right? Of
course,
yeah.
So, that's enough to talk about shit. Coronavirus. So, 500 people in Italy dead. The whole thing on lockdown. The economy is taking a massive dip. W.H. Smith, you were telling me, which is the book suppliers, have cancelled their orders because they predict airport traffic is going to be down 70%. Like, I'm just going to turn this aircon on. But yeah, keep going.
Yeah, because, obviously people don't want to travel. I think the point lots of people are missing as well, and actually Tom Brady, I think, was a huge victim of this. I don't know if you saw his post. He put out a post, and obviously people care because he's really good at football, but he's making the point, like, how many more people die of other stuff than this.
Yeah.
So it's like, today
which
we
is
had
what everyone does.
A few hundred people die of coronavirus, and we had, like, this many thousand heart disease and this many thousand cancer. But that's not really the point. Like, the point he's missing is, like, it's a pandemic that's starting. Yeah. That could get phenomenally worse. That anybody could catch, and we don't have a vaccine for.
Because anyone right now can have a heart condition.
Yes, whereas that's different to just things that, they're obviously current problems that we're dealing with, but heart disease is not a pandemic.
But they're predictable.
Yeah, and they're not ripping through like schools and could go across countries. And there's other flus that kill people, but they're not as bad as this one.
So this has... So we're talking about earlier we were talking about SARS, right? So SARS was, you were telling me, is a lot more deadly. So it had a much higher mortality rate than coronavirus. But you were saying that SARS spread it slower because it was killing its victims.
Yeah, it wasn't as like contagious.
Right.
People are dying quicker from this. Like, a lot of people get this and they seem to be fine. That's what I understand. But it's got that pretty bad middle ground where it can kill people and it can be really bad. But some people can be asymptomatic and some people can just get, you know, mild symptoms and then be able to go to school, go to work, travel and spread it everywhere.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's a lot of people out there that are looking at the statistics of the mortality rate and seeing stuff, you know, under 1% for their category and thinking, well, fuck, if I kill, you know, I'm healthy, I'm strong, you know, I get sleep, I'm not stressed or whatever. If I get this thing, I'm not worried, which is fair, right? But I think what they're saying is the risk is if you carry it and you spread it to someone that's in your, like, in your network and that spreads to the next person, eventually it makes its way down to someone that you care about that does have a weak immune system.
Most people have someone they care about over the age of 60.
That has a weak immune system, right? For whatever reason. That person could die. Yeah. And it's hard. It's not your fault, but you want to know that you're doing as much you can to prevent. And what I was told was the best things you can do, like the number one thing you can do, which reduces infection, infection, right? Is 40% decrease in the likelihood of your own infection is to wash your hands thoroughly.
Wow.
And actually, Tim Ferriss put up a post. It was like this kind of meme thing, but it was about how to wash your hands. It was like this cartoon of these different hand techniques. And I don't know, when I wash my hands, I usually just turn my fingers inside a clasped hand. Most people just rub their hands together, right?
Yep.
So how you do it, and I'm going to do my best to describe this in audio, but is you start with your hands open, right? So your fingers splayed, and you interlock your fingers, right? So you're like, it's like you're clapping, but your fingers are crossing between each other, and you scrub like that, right? So you're getting the insides of your hands. Now you do the same thing, but you place your right hand on the back of your left hand, and then you scrub through that, and then you do the opposite. You place your left hand on the back of your right hand, you scrub like that. Then what you do is, you know, when you do like a drug dealer's handshake, like you come in close, right, with the first slap, and then as you pull away, you roll the money into the hand and the drugs. So you make that kind of grip on you, and you rotate in that. So you hold that locked grip and you rotate within that, and that cleans the top of your fingers. Then what you do is you take that half claw and you place the half claw down on your inside of your left, so right half claw, and you scrub your palm with your claw, and that's cleaning like all the tips of your nails and the tips of your fingers, right? So you do that on both sides. And then the last thing that you do is you wrap your whole hand around one of your thumbs and you twist your thumb inside your finger and then do that on the opposite side. And that's like a full, like, proper
surgical.
That's like the surgical, way they do it. Well, they wash all the way up to their elbows. Obviously, they're like cutting up bodies and shit. So
I was just going to do more like the LeBron James method, like what he does with chalk. Just wash my hands and just throw the water everywhere.
Just spray
clean
it.
Clean as much as
just
I can around.
Spread coronavirus everywhere.
But it is interesting. I think it's a reminder of why it's really good to stay fit and healthy.
Yeah.
If you're not fit and healthy, if you're like overweight, I mean, I don't know how much difference it makes, but I'm guessing in general it's going to make a difference towards you being less prepared for it. Because they generally say, hey, the weaker your immune system, the more likely this is to be harder for you to recover from.
Yeah.
It's like the more robust you can be, the better. But I am waiting because I just think gyms have such a bad reputation for being a place where people spread disease.
Man, like,
it's
crazy.
Everyone already knows that. It's like, oh, you go to the gym, it's gross, people sweating and sneezing. And like, yeah, it's probably true. So, I could imagine it's a breeding ground.
Yeah, well, that's why we're launching our at-home workout gym program. The safest coronavirus-free program. But in all seriousness, the actual, like, because it's a respiratory virus, so you if you don't know how you die, you basically, it feels like you're choking, like you're drowning, basically. So, your lungs are filling up with water or whatever, and you choke to death. It's absolutely horrific. But that, because it's respiratory, anyone that does have respiratory issues, so i.e. people that smoke a lot, whether they vape or they smoke weed or they smoke tobacco, they're at higher risk. And in Europe, a lot more people per capita do those three things than anywhere in the world. And so that's why they're really worried in particular about Europe, because so many people have compromised respiratory systems because they're toxic and they're damaged and they're like, they get high infection rates there. So that was potentially one of the reasons it spread so fast in Italy. I also heard because it has the second highest Chinese population outside of China, which I didn't know, which is absolutely crazy. So man, there's like a lot going on now. My fear is that obviously we have to close the gyms. That's obviously a concern. We're doing all the best measures that we can to prevent that. And we continue to do that. Have hand sanitizer available, cleaning the equipment, putting extra cleans at the gym, and then obviously just like making sure that, you know, if people are infected, like, or they're feeling anything like that, they have to stay out of the gym. So that's really important. But we've had big brands already fold. Like, I don't know if you international listeners have ever heard of Kiki K. It's like a stationery brand. It's like a really big name in Australia. It's an Australian company. They folded, you know, which is crazy. They, I don't know how many stores they had, over 100 stores. They were everywhere. And they just gone down. It was the combination of the bushfires and then straight into the coronavirus. It's put a massive hit on retail, import, export. So I'll be interested to see what happens next.
Yeah, I will mention one thing. And this article got sent to me by my mum. She generally sends me stuff about cleanliness. and it says, the coronavirus is an upper respiratory virus, and it's not spread through bacteria. It also cannot be transmitted through sweat. And it was in the context of this article from this big, massive gym chain in Canada that's like putting out information, trying to get people to keep coming to, keep coming to the gym. So I don't know if you can 100% trust it. But it does say that, yeah, healthy people in the gym, it can't be... Like, you can, you definitely need to wash your hands and stuff, but sweat shouldn't be a massive problem.
So, you can transmit other viruses through sweat?
I guess so.
Oh, wow. So, if someone's sweaty lies down, you lie in their sweat, you get it.
Yeah. Or you just stink of them.
Yeah. Or I guess skin infections, right? That's how you get staph. Yes, yeah, it makes sense. Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, one of the things I was talking about is, I think Whoop's like a really good way to see. Remember when we both got sick, you know, last season, last flu season, is we started to see the Whoop score drop on the way in. And I was thinking to myself, like, if I start seeing this Whoop score dropping, there's a slight panic in me right now that I could be getting sick. And I don't know. I just feel like we're entering into an era now where the Whoop, everyone will have some form of a Whoop band, whether it's like a Fitbit. It's funny because, you know, when it's like, oh, you buy a red car, you see red cars everywhere.
Yep.
Now that we've got the Whoop bands, I see Fitbits and Whoops and all this stuff everywhere. Whoop's more of like a, it's... Like, when someone has a Whoop, I'll go up to them and be like, oh, you got a Whoop band. Like, it's kind of
shared
rare.
Friendship.
Yeah, right. It's like...
Like in the early days of CrossFit when they had Nanos on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so not many people had it.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's kind of how I feel the Whoop band is kind of slowly making its way into the market. But I think definitely people that are more serious about their training, their recovery, are wearing Whoops and care more about the performance. And one interesting thing was I had this mad green streak for a while. It's just really recovered. And then I had a red day. Couldn't really figure out why, but what I definitely noticed is the same flight of stairs up to my place every single time. And when I was going up the stairs, I had more lactic on the days like when I was red. And it's just anything where you push volume a little bit, it's really hard on red days. I don't know what it is. It's just like you breathe harder, the lactic builds up quicker. Like, it is crazy how well it correlates. And I was telling you earlier that I've almost thought, okay, I'm seeing green and so I'm pushing myself more. Am I seeing red and I'm pushing myself less? What if I just take a guess? What if I go into a session and I go, okay, today felt like a red day, a yellow day, or a green day, and I've been doing that and I can now predict it pretty quickly. I think it really helps you tune in more, and I think it's, you know, it's just really accurate.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's one of the biggest things about training is people never really thought about how they feel each day. Training is like the ultimate thing, I think, that gives you that feedback on like how recovered you actually are.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, if you are pretty experienced with training, I reckon you can pick your red, yellow, and green days like 80% of the time.
Yeah.
85% of the time. I don't know if you noticed, but we've also upgraded their journal function in the app.
I know they just did an update.
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. It's like, now there's like way more stuff on the journal. It's like, I actually haven't been through it, but it'll ask you like sexual questions, like activity and that sort of stuff as well.
You mean like libido questions?
I think so, yeah.
Right.
And it's just like much more in-depth. So it's much more in-depth journaling about like how you feel and everything to get more data on people. Hopefully, they're keeping this data safe.
Mm.
But
we'll see.
Yeah, but they are upgrading it. And we can say we've got like inside word from Whoop. They've shown us. It will be released to the public soon. But they're coming out with, you know, awesome new hardware and different stuff like that. Mm. Like different ways to use the same technology depending on your sport.
Mm.
More specific stuff for different sports. Because I know the wristband is, you know, not perfect for every sport.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So that's, I think, where they're putting a lot of their efforts at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, one thing I'll leave you guys with just before we get into the listener questions is I was sharing some people my nutrition protocol. I'm actually basing some nutrition stuff off Whoop now. I've been reading a lot of stuff on immune system. Now I'm obviously reading on what has science shown us, what is the research telling us, what is anecdote about improving immunity. And one of the things that really improves immunity is carbohydrate and protein intake more than any micronutrient. So What I came up with a protocol, and this is something that I talked a little bit about with Ben Pakulski at his seminar when he was there, is he also does something similar like this as well. And so based off my recovery score, my HRV, the HRV stuff, I think, is tying in very closely to your immune system, because it's like your whole nervous system, right? How well recovered it is. That ties into your immunity. There's no way you have a damaged, beaten up nervous system and a strong immune system. Mm. Like, if nervous system function is down, immunity is down, right? And so at 40%, at 40 to 30%, I increase carbs by 50 grams. At 30 to 20%, another 50. At 20 to 10, another 50. And at 10 to 0, another 50, which means every 10% bracket below 40%, I increase my daily carbs by 50 grams. And at 40% plus, I just eat normally the same. And it helps me get out of the red zone faster. And I think it also makes, well, I know it also makes the days when I am red, it helps me to function better and train better. So it's a little protocol I was sharing with someone in person. I thought, yeah, got to remember to share this with people on the podcast.
Yeah, it's good. Do you think you get a boost just from like the extra glucose running through your body?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the fuel for the nervous system, yeah, right, is glucose. So I think it just really helps. And there's just good research and data showing that, yeah, protein and carbs just really good for immunity.
Okay, we got some good questions this week in the listener questions. Two Brawns to kick it off. We have Brawn Athletics. How much cardio is necessary when trying to get strong? XFit versus HIIT versus long? Mm. Question mark.
It's a good question. So if you guys are interested, whoop.com/MMB to pick up a whoop band. Okay, so I mean, if you're trying to get strong, then the primary adaptation is, sorry, the most important thing should be done first. That's usually the rule. So really, if strength is the most important thing, you don't want anything to take away from that. Now, there is an amount of cardio and a type of cardio you can do to support strength training, but it's very limited. And in my experience and what, you know, we've given to our clients and what we've seen work is generally, if you absolutely want to peak your strength as much as possible, is doing low impact, slow conditioning, stuff like walking, stuff like cruising, stuff on the air bike. I remember a lot of the programming I used to do in my strength phases was, yeah, just long rides on the air bike, kind of recovery efforts, because you just want enough cardiovascular health. You want to stay in that 120, 150 beats per minute, just so your body recovers, you get blood flow, you work on a bit of conditioning, just so that you're not breathing so hard between sets, you can handle a little bit more volume and blood flow in your strength training sessions. But outside of that, any high-intensity cardio is a no-go. Mm. That's going to take away from strength. Anything high-impact is a no-go. That's going to take away from strength for sure.
Yeah. You know, when you're getting stronger, obviously there's like muscle, which gets sore. Then there's the nervous system. But one of the hugest strains is just on your tendons and ligaments.
Yeah.
You know, like I've done strength cycles before. I mean, I could be wrong, but I generally feel like my tendons are sore. You get a bit of that ache, you know, when you wake up in the morning.
Right.
And your knees and when you've been like really pushing the weights on lower body lifting. So if you go do cardio that strains your tendons, it doesn't really make much sense in that time.
No.
You've already put heaps of strain on it. You're like pushing past your limits. That's what getting stronger is. Activity that puts extra stress on that is like generally not a good idea.
Yeah.
So as much as you can just keep your cardio just absolutely zero impact, it's going to be so much better.
Yeah, I think there's if you look at the strongest guys in the world, powerlifters, right? And if you watch their training methods now, I think they're doing more sled work and they're doing a bit more maybe accessory work and bodybuilding and stuff that, you know, produces more of an aerobic stimulus as opposed to the guys that do 2 or 3 reps and they sit down for 10 minutes. But, you know, being healthy is important, right? So that's definitely one thing that's going to help you get stronger. But yeah, doing a lot of cardio to get strong is going to be detrimental.
This is Will Braun. Best high-calorie foods / meals for bulking that are easy to cook and don't cause inflammation.
Yeah, so I looked this one up because I remember I saw this a while ago, but previous guest of the podcast, Joe Delaney, really good guy, great episode. If you guys haven't listened to that one yet, I would highly recommend it. Joe is a YouTuber / Instagrammer, so I guess influencer, for lack of a better term. So if you type in Joe Delaney, so Joe, J-O-E, space, Delaney, D-E-L-A-N-E-Y, and then you type one pan, as in like one frying pan, Joe Delaney one pan. He's got a video with 555,000 views. It's called One Pan Bulking Meals for Building Muscle, 4 Quick and Easy Ideas. Now, one pan just means you can do the whole thing with one fry pan. You don't need all this extra equipment, all this random stuff. It's for like the dude.
Yes.
Like there's just a bit of a bro, doesn't want to learn heaps of cooking skills, but still wants something interesting, exciting, wants to be clean, wants to eat it.
And most importantly, doesn't want washing up.
Exactly. And so I watched that video a while ago, and that's got some really, really good meal ideas. And he's got tons of good meal stuff in there. So I would definitely go and check that out as a good starting point for sure.
Yeah, nothing better than vegetables, carbs, and protein, and fat all in one pan.
Yeah. And look, remember, with high-calorie foods, you know, the more processed the food is, the more high calories it is. Mm. But, you know, the less micronutrients you get from it, probably not as good for your health. For a lot of people, it upsets the digestive system. But it just depends how hard you're trying to bulk, right? How much weight are you trying to put on? But start with that video. I think it's a really good starting point. And then if you're trying to add extra high-calorie foods, leaning more towards the processed foods, it's going to help you out more.
Okay, this is from Molly Wilmot. What are the best strength exercises for triathlete? Brackets, long distance. I mean, they are a little bit different, but I guess most long distance sports fit into triathlons. I think the most important thing when you are prepping for that sort of event, if you just stick with the triathlon, is posterior chain strength and calf strength.
Mm.
They take an absolute beating across them. None of the three exercises, the way most people run, definitely cycling and swimming, train the posterior chain very much. But generally, you know, running coaches will find that as people strengthen their posterior chain, their running technique actually improves rather than gets worse. It helps you be more upright as you run. And then, you know, the more stable foot platform you've got, obviously your running is going to improve, but also just the less injuries you're going to have. And we find we've had tons of clients come in that do that sort of training, do just general strength training for their lower body, focusing on those areas, go back. And do really well, even without much sport-specific training in there.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll also, if you go to the triathlon more specifically, is they'll just do stuff to get their injuries better. If you spend that long hunched over on a bike, any sort of thoracic extension work can really help because it's been so long in thoracic flexion. You know, you spend more time cycling than you do running and swimming by a long way. So just stuff that takes that to the reverse is really helpful. You know, back when we used to do rowing, we definitely had it wrong because we used to always think you only wanted to do the muscle group that you use when you were rowing. So you're like, oh, you never press because you row. You know, that's just like stupid.
So the whole stupidest thing in the world. Rowing team had pathetic bench press.
Yeah, we did for a while, and then we got a proper strength coach in, and they were like, oh no, you guys got this completely wrong. They're like, when you're in the gym, you want to do some of that stuff, but most of what you want to do is the reverse of what you're doing when you're on the rowboat, because you need to balance it out.
Yeah,
and you stop getting injuries. So we're doing like heaps more push-ups, heaps more pressing, and then like pulls with the lower, like, you know, single leg work with the lower body, pulls with the lower body, and injuries went way down.
Mm.
And it was so much better. Like, you know, you get a lot of injuries, like shoulder injuries, rib injuries from just like leaning over, rowing all day in a boat.
Mm.
So that's like such a big error. It's just trying to like, you know, trying to exactly replicate what you're doing in your sport.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've heard it a few times recently, but yeah, I mean, the best kind of training that you can do is, and we heard this from Nick Gill recently, from the All Blacks strength and conditioning coach, is honestly to just do general strength, like general preparedness. I think everyone wants to get fancy with this sport-specific stuff. And yeah, I think you get specific when you've got injuries and imbalances. But outside of that, general physical strength and health helps everything. It's just, and it's easy, right? Get good at squatting, get good at deadlifting, get good at carrying stuff, get good at pressing stuff, get good at pulling stuff, like do all that stuff, have good side-to-side balance. Like, man, you cover most of your bases, you know, then do your sport. Then do your sport.
Yeah, the idea that some special thing they've got to do if you're in like a triathlon is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, good question though, because at least you're doing strength training and not just triathlons.
That's good.
Okay, final job here. Final question, and this is a fun one. Would you rather, it's from Luminous Red Light, would you rather win the lottery or work at the perfect job?
No, I saw that one earlier and then I asked you, without telling you it was a listener question, you straight away jumped to win the lottery. Why did you jump straight to win the lottery?
I think because winning the lottery gives you far more options than the perfect job. You know, winning the lottery, you go create your own job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably do it. I guess which lottery is? I'm guessing it's a fucking massive lottery here. Mm-hmm. I've made it good. It's not like a $50,000 lottery.
No. This is like Powerball. Yeah, $150 million.
This is Powerball.
Yeah.
This is Powerball. And I think, you know, a perfect job is sick. Like, that would be awesome. You know, you got something, pays the bills, and you love it, and you work up every day, like, doing your ultimate passion.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying it's not good. But I also found with the Moneyball one, maybe this is becoming apparent, is winning the lottery could help out a lot of people's lives. Whereas your perfect job, unless it pays really, really well, probably just helping your own life.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not doing much for anyone around you.
That's a good point. I mean, that's a tough question. I mean, I think, you only say win the lottery because you know how to... because you've owned a business, like, you know how money creates more money. So you would know what to do with it. Whereas a lot of people just start spending it.
That's true. For most people, they're probably better off finding the perfect job.
Yeah. But I mean, because this question is directed to us, I mean, most people fail with the lottery. That's just because they didn't learn the skills of what it takes to get that sort of money. So obviously someone who's made $100 million in their life has acquired a set of skills, understands taxes, understands investing, understands, you know, really high level mathematics when it, or not even high level, but understands the mathematics they need at a very, very, you know, solid level, understands banking, understands so many different aspects that surround creating that kind of wealth, that people that win that kind of wealth, they don't understand. They don't understand, hey, like, if you just, you know, put 90% of it in a bank, or sorry, in a fund, like, you can just live off the interest. They don't know that. So they just go and spend it, and then they just run out, right? Or they think, okay, I'm going to just spend, and happiness is somewhere at whatever dollar. I'm going to figure it out. Whereas, you know, people that have made that much money realize, okay, money is not to do with happiness. Money is like other stuff. It's values, it's impact, it's helping other people, that sort of stuff. And so it's one of those things where it just depends on the person you're asking. But yeah, for us, it would be winning the lotto.
Man, I'd blow a lot of it, I got to be honest. I would blow a lot.
what would you buy? Okay, so let's say it's really hard to spend like more than $5 million in a day. So say you're limited to one day.
Fuck.
Because you'd say like, oh, I'd buy this. Say you really only had 24 hours. Because you go to a car dealership, it takes half a day, right? To get a nice car. So that's,
the day would go really fast.
Yeah.
I think I generally would struggle. Well, in terms of if I kept it to health and fitness, I would probably go to that
chiropractic.
We got recommended that gym that was in like Ukraine or some shit, like the coolest gym in the whole world.
We got recommended.
Yeah, it was like a podcast guest. It was like, okay, hey, this is the best gym in the whole world.
Oh yeah,
some gym in like Ukraine.
So you'd fly to Ukraine,
private and jet, do a straight there to do a session.
The session would cost you $30, and then
wouldn't matter. I won the money.
Private jet's like $100,000.
I won it all. Okay, Lucas Fisher. So, a little bit of context. At the moment, I'm used to train in a normal gym without the possibility to combine movements. So, example, row with some gymnastic movements for training, mixed modality.
Mm.
How can I substitute row, ski, bike through other movements and get the same stimulus in my system? How would you approach this? I'll tell you a way not to do it. I don't know if OG listeners remember, we had Street Horner on the podcast like a very long time ago. He's a CrossFit Games athlete.
I think he's dating one of the top CrossFit girls.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's one of the most beautiful CrossFit Games athletes.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure. Insane body as well.
Insane.
If people have seen our tour to Dubai videos, it's in there. He's like got a 12-pack.
It's crazy.
Anyway, he came on the show and he didn't have a rower and he had to do like CrossFit workouts that had like 1,000-meter rows. And he would substitute sumo deadlift high pull for every meter. So, with like 1,000 sumo deadlift high pulls. That's not the way to do it.
No, that's horrible. That's horrific. Yeah. So, with conditioning, the first thing that comes to mind that's monostructural is skipping. But if you're subbing skipping every single day, you're going to start doing some serious damage to your feet and your ankles and even your knees, really, your calves. So, that's something you're going to have to build up and get into. Obviously, boxers skip every day, but they built it up, right? They skip for an hour to warm up in training. They do it 7 days a week or whatever. They built that up. So, that's some good conditioning there. Burpees is obviously a really good one. But yeah, obviously the monostructural equipment, it's fixed. Like, you can't just start wheeling rowers around in a commercial fitness gym. So you might have to bring the equipment to the monostructural stuff, which might mean, you know, if you can't bring a barbell over there, take some dumbbells or take a kettlebell. Or, you know, if you've got pull-ups and you've got a pull-up rack, you might need to do some kettlebell rows instead. You know, change a pull-up to a row. So you just got to get really creative with some of that stuff. But yeah, skipping is definitely, you know, probably the most portable monostructural equipment. Burpees, you know, depending on how your squatting is, like air squats can be good, but it is more isolated to sort of quad fatigue. Yeah, I don't think I would be doing anything like star jumps or anything like that. I mean, yeah, you could do running on the spot, I guess.
To be honest, it is actually very hard, I think, to replace.
It is.
You know, yeah. It's not like you can just... Yeah, replacing ski erg, rower and bike is very challenging if you don't have any machines. It's why, like, you know, in our gyms, very often, it's like the only machines we'll have is like those machines.
Yeah.
Because they are, you know, almost impossible
and valuable
to replicate.
Yeah.
Generally, if you have a gym that's like no machines, like, you probably still have those machines because they're like so hard to replicate. But I would also just think, you know, I used to do this all the time where I would like have some crazy mixed modal workout and it was like epic and I'd be trying to beat my time. I'd get back and someone was on the rower. And it's just not that fun.
Yeah.
And over time, I've changed my mind that I think that if you're training at gyms, one of the best things you can do is just like, rather than trying to fit your perfect session into the gym, just go with what's the best type of training at that gym. So if you're at a gym that is like more around just like regular, more bodybuilding style training, when you're there doing more of that sort of routine, I think you're going to get more enjoyment out of it. You're going to feed off the atmosphere in there more. The gym is just going to be set up better for it. And then if you want to do more of like the CrossFit style training, you should really find like more of a CrossFit style gym and make the effort to travel there. Go in there. You'll be in a wicked environment and you'll kill it in there.
Yeah.
And if you want to do some weightlifting, go to a weightlifting gym. But, you know, I always remember every time I do a type of training, I get so much more out of it when I'm in the right place. Like, I knew I couldn't beat a CrossFit workout in a Globo gym. Yeah. I mean, the weight is the same. Yeah. I just knew I couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's different.
You're like, I just, dude, I can't go to that place in that environment. And you just, you know it. And you see those guys trying to, like, do this, like, special thing in the gym. And sometimes I'm like, oh, man, it's just, I know you got to work with what you've got. But if you can get to the right environment, you will get to your goals faster.
Yeah, like no one gets a sick arm pump in a CrossFit gym. No. I mean, you kind of do, but if you want the arm workout of the gods, you go to a Globo gym.
Yeah,
it's still for that shit.
It's the way it is. And if you want to go to powerlift, you know, people travel the West Side Barbell, I'm sure, for a reason.
Yeah.
Then just go to any time.
100%.
But yeah. I think if you take your training seriously, I think it's worth going to the right environment. I really believe you enjoy it more. Whatever you extra you got to pay, I think it's if you're passionate about your health and fitness, you should find a way to pay it.
Definitely.
Because I just see people so often doing the wrong type of training in a gym and it always ends. You know, even in our gym, someone might want to do, oh, I wanted to do this different sort of training, but like, I love your gym, so I want to keep doing it there.
Doesn't work.
Within like 2 weeks, they're like, ah, oh, nah, fuck it.
Yeah.
It's not working. Yeah, it never works. Work. No, it never works.
Never works.
It only works if you're like in the right place, doing the right type of training. So, you know, and I think that's a trend that is going to, is a huge trend in the health and fitness industry. It used to be like one gym, you can do everything. And I think where it's going now is it's more like, no, 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 heaps and heaps of different gyms specific to each type of training.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. All right, so before we get into our Netflix review for the week, we got a new sponsor. You guys may have heard of it. I think we introduced them last week, Blue Blocks, which is the blue light blocking glasses company. We did an interview with the founder, which we were talking about yesterday. One of the, excuse the pun, most eye-opening... That was a good one. One of the most eye-opening podcasts we've listened to in a while. I guarantee you, when this one drops, it will be shared a lot. Mm. You know, there's some episodes like the Kelly Surrett one, the James Smith one, some that just get shared around.
We knew as soon as we stopped recording it.
Yeah, it was just so good. The information in it is crazy. Yeah, the information in it was just so good. So that'll be out soon. But you know, a lot of people are looking to do blue light blocking, not just at night, but also for the extended screen use that's happening during the day, which I've started using their daylight blockers, which makes a huge difference. But the biggest thing I didn't know was they actually had all their lenses tested in a laboratory to see which light spectrum it was blocking, making sure it was blocking the blue and the green light, which they wanted it to. And they developed a lens that did. But then when they went and tested like 30 other pairs that were in the industry, they're pretty big names, none of them blocked it. It was crazy.
Yeah. And
someone's pretty expensive.
Yeah. And what you want is you actually really want it to block the right amount as well. So there'd be some that were meant to be at night and they wouldn't block enough, so it still disrupt your sleep. Or they would just block too much, which I've experienced in the past, and that's good, but then you just can't see shit.
Yeah.
And then you can't see shit, and then honestly what I would do is I'd constantly lift them up to actually see, just actually find food out of the fridge and actually do things at night, and then I would just see full blue light.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just not getting very far and I just get frustrated.
Yeah.
So actually a lot goes into it, and I think it's the future of these sort of glasses.
Yeah, I think if anyone's spending, 5-6 hours a day on a screen, you are doing serious damage to your sleep cycles, to your hormonal health, to your eye health, I was getting those tired eyes, I was getting headaches, I was getting all sorts of crazy stuff. There's going to be a huge podcast when it gets released. But yeah, if anyone already knows the benefits of wearing stuff like this, you're interested, you want to upgrade your pair, you want to, use technology in the lens that's actually tested in the lab, then head over to Blue Blocks, so BLUBLOX.com, and our code is MMP. That's going to get you 15% off any pair. So I'd recommend, I'm using the Lennon frames, so they're obviously really fashionable frames for the daylight ones, and then I've got Lennons at night as well.
Yeah, awesome. They've got all different types, so you can get like, they've basically just taken the technology and they've put them in fashionable frames.
Exactly, yeah. So Netflix review, this week for me, I started Drive to Survive Formula 1 Season 2, which now I've sort of tactically seen how they're releasing these seasons right before the start of the Formula One season, which starts this weekend. So I think it's trying to drive more viewers. And as we were talking about, Netflix is using, I mean, these sports that are kind of, you know, mainstream and big, but to drive more, that's the dog, to drive more listeners, sorry, more viewers to the sport, more fans of the sport, is they use these Netflix documentaries, because it does, it really, it turns the sport into a movie. It creates multiple different stories within a sport, and that is what gets people in. A good story gets people in, right? How many more people do you reckon started watching basketball this year when Kobe Bryant passed away? I reckon lots, right? I reckon heaps of people re-engage with the sport, see what would happen. Because stories sell, you know, everything. And so I think that the story in Formula One that they've created here in season two is just absolutely incredible. So in season one, they didn't get Lewis Hamilton, who's like the number one guy. Maybe you've heard of him. Season two, they got him. That's how successful it was. So it was obviously a really successful season.
To do interviews and stuff
like
that.
Yeah. So like Mercedes and Ferrari, the two top teams, they weren't covered at all in the first season. But obviously, due to the success of the season, they're all like, all right, cool, we're all on board.
Yeah.
And dude, it's obviously, because it's just a crazy sport. Like, it's just filled with adventure. So season two, absolutely love it. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5.
How fast does the Formula One car go?
The average speed is over 300 Ks now. Average. Dude, they got up to like 360 Ks.
Well, you and I don't know if that's the fastest you've ever gone. You and I have gone in, with Macaulay Jones, we've gone in a race car.
Yeah, V8 supercar.
A V8 supercar.
Yeah, and which is like the Aussie Bogan version of like the motorsport.
And we went about, what, 250 kilometers an hour?
Yeah, but people have gone that fast before, but what you don't understand is you go that fast in such a short period. So the acceleration...
Oh, yeah, dude. I thought he was joking when we took off.
Because you could get to a top speed in a normal car. Like, we take my car now, we'd go 250 Ks, but we'd build up slowly, right? So it would feel gradual. Whereas, like, man, you get in that thing, and when it fucking takes off, like, you are stuck to your seat.
You're right. Through Germany, I drove like 180. It just feels normal.
Yeah.
But in this, you go 250, but then also you're like going towards a brick wall.
Yeah,
that is not far in front of you.
The braking is insane.
So I don't know how this guy's doing in Formula One, because I rode around this car for probably a few minutes, and I was sick. I was sick the whole rest of the day. I had to stop on my way home. I was like, I'm going to vomit. I was like an absolute wreck. My cheeks were like pulled to the back of my face.
That's so funny. You don't. I mean, you got sick go-karting as well. You don't do well with motion sickness, eh? Well, going down a hill once and it was kind of like windy hill, you're like, I'm getting sick, lock.
Yes, I'm never going to be in Formula One.
Yeah.
And my parents are billionaires. So probably not
accessible sport. It is a rich man's sport. So you watch the rest of Babies?
Yeah, so I finished Babies. There was like two or three more episodes to get through.
Nice.
Which I highly recommend. A lot of people were like, oh, I didn't like actually the start of it. I think the later episodes are much better than the first episodes. So if you didn't love the first episodes, I would give the later ones a go. But there's like really interesting stuff in there about their development. I would say one thing I never knew is that they always thought babies grew like just on a curve, right? They'll grow like whatever, 3 centimeters in 2 months. And what they found out is that they actually don't grow nearly every day. And then in one day, they'll grow like 1.5 centimeters.
That's weird.
And then like another 12 days, no growth. So the way they just measured, they came in, they started measuring babies every single day to the millimeter. Yeah. And they're like, no growth, no growth, no growth. Next day, it's like 1.5 centimeters taller than the day before. And then the same thing, no growth.
So there's like the term growth spurt. That's where it comes from.
Yeah, but it's like legit growth spurt overnight.
Yeah. It's crazy. Imagine growing 1.5 centimeters like now.
Yeah.
Like just out of nowhere. It's crazy.
I do dream about that sometimes.
But yeah, it's a great series. What was your rating? 4 out of 5, I think, last week?
Yeah, I gave it 4 out of 5. I think I gave it 3, but I'm going to upgrade it to like a 4.5 because I got to the later episodes. And it's really timely for me.
Yeah, very timely.
But I would say that, yeah, if you're thinking about having one or you have a baby, I think it'd be pretty interesting.
Yeah, even if you're not, like, I think it's interesting regardless.
Yeah.
So we have, we are so close. I'm hoping we can launch these programs on Monday, the new 8-week program. So we've got 3 programs, Project Fitness, Project Body, and Project Strong. So they're pretty self-explanatory. One is for strength, one is for endurance, and one is for body composition, physique. So we're very excited to launch these programs. Obviously, Raf and I, ton of training knowledge, ton of experience, interviewed some of the best people in those fields in the world, and just taken so much over the last 6 years. And we've got our coaches as well on board to help us write these programs. They write programs every day, so we wanted to involve them. So we've come up with these 3 8-week programs. So we'll be officially announcing their release very soon. But yeah, they're in the final stages of development, and we'll be looking to launch them very soon, but we'll keep you in the loop. But for now, guys, thank you for tuning in. Anyone that tries to tune in on a regular basis at the time it gets released, apologies for the delay, will not happen again. Thanks so much, guys. Speak to you soon. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.